Hey guys, just wanted to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com/Beer City Media Podcast for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show. Welcome to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast with Ryan, Springhill Josh, and the Illuma Mommy herself, Miss April.
We're our own soundboard today.
That's true, because Larry's not here, but that's okay, and we love him. And on today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Rodney Alcala.
Drop that bass.
Kitchen Studio 2022. I'm gathered with my cuz and his beautiful bride. It is voter night. Mm-hmm. We all voted.
Yes.
So please, hopefully out there, you did your part. This is well past it. The results are out and the world's on fire. Oh God, it's Godzilla. Oh yeah. No.
You know, it doesn't, that's the scary thing about it. It doesn't matter who wins.
No, it's the world's going to be on fire. Way. It's fine.
Pretty
Everything's
much. Fine. Anyways.
Everything's wonderful.
Can I just interject?
Sure.
Because obviously Larry's not here with us tonight. He had some family issues that he had to attend to. So we're doing this sans Larry. So I would like to say to Larry, as you're editing this, for me, as a personal favor, can you keep that intro in and just skip the real song? Just leave all, like, don't even edit the beginning of this. Because I want it to be just that. That just was so good.
So natural and off the cuff. Yeah. I get you.
I love it.
I think Larry is a producing genius, and I think he'll see the worth. Okay. So
good deal.
Okay. Here's to Larry.
I'm so scared for whatever happens in the rest of this episode.
Well, oh, God.
It'll be all right.
All right. Well, let's pull the Thunderbird to the side of the road. Disney World. Shut up. I didn't want to have kids. All right. Sorry. Truth Corner. Mm-hmm. If you were on a blind dating show, what would you ask contestants who are hoping to date you?
What do you look like?
What's that?
I'd be like, what do you look like? What do I look like?
I mean,
do my clothes match?
Do you want to see Arnold in Predator 1987? Because that's Josh. Mm-hmm. Do you want to see April, aka Pamela Anderson, on Baywatch?
Right.
Well, that's it.
Here I am.
Do you want to see
Gary Sinise?
Gary Sinise.
Yep. It's Gary. It's only Gary Sinise. 89 Batman over here.
That's right.
That's right.
So what questions would we ask on a dating show?
Yeah, like if you were on... So, full disclosure, Rodney Alcala is the dating game killer, as he's been dubbed. Mm-hmm. But he... And I have my whole preliminary that I'll get into before we actually go through the info. He could be in our top three worst monsters we've ever covered.
Oh, fun.
Like, it's legitimate in that type of...
Maybe it's a good thing Larry wasn't here.
I think so, because I think he would literally be like, these details are making me want to jump.
It's fine. We'll just make him listen to it in post.
There you go. But if you were on a dating show, like Rodney was, he was one of the three male contestants who was vying for the love of the main girl. If you were that main girl, what would you ask as far as like sussing out like,
oh, easy. How long's your dick? I think that's fairly obvious. That's
I'm
what I'd
a banana.
Know. Anything after that, I really don't care.
I'm a banana. Yeah.
Wow, how long?
But
is
you know,
your dick?
you have to like put it in that weird like 70s euphemism style. Like,
how long's your tallywhacker?
No, it has to be like contestant number three. Mm-hmm. If your body part was a fruit, what kind of fruit would it be? You know how they're always like
a baby carrot,
shirking around what they're really trying to ask. I'd be like, hey, how long's your dick? How what are you slanging? How's the pipe laying?
A microwave potato.
Oh God, that's horrible. It'd be worse to be like a microwave hot dog.
I mean, yeah. Well, interesting. I mean, that's yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like what you said. Josh, what would you ask?
Gosh, what would I ask? If I was a goyle?
I mean, you don't have to be a girl. I mean, there's probably like,
yeah.
I feel like I've seen dating shows.
Reversed,
yeah.
Let's see. You know, I'm going to.
How big are your tits?
I would say if I was a girl, mm-hmm. I would say.
Why are you a girl?
I don't know, because that's the premise of this episode.
Yeah, but they've had guys and then three girls on the other side.
I guess so. I would say, do you have chlamydia?
An important question, indeed.
I mean, are you clean? I guess would be the and hopefully she would say, you know, Mr. Clean down below.
Is that a reference to like STDs, or is that a reference to like the lawn maintenance?
That's true.
Mr. Clean, as far as like what? Because Mr. Clean is bald as a billiard ball.
True.
Hey.
I mean, both might work for somebody.
True.
Or the opposite. I don't know. I don't know.
I want you full of crabs and hairy as a 70s porn star.
I want to feel like I'm looking
Mr.
at Bob
Clean
Ross.
Yeah, ma'am.
God. All right. So me personally, okay. So if I'm asking questions, I feel like the first question I would ask is, are you a wanted felon?
That's a good place to start.
Well, you would think the producers would have done their jobs.
Well, that was 1978. We'll get to that.
The screening process was a little lax in the 70s.
It was more like, are you a human and are you semi-attractive?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because Rodney...
He's a good looking guy.
Full disclosure, and we'll post pictures on our Instagram, believe me. He's a good looking dude.
He is.
He's got
charm.
He's got charm. He is, according to everybody he worked with, was like a good dude. Mm-hmm. Like he seemed like the type of guy who would be like, hey man, are you all right? Or
he came
how
off
you doing?
Very surfer bro.
I could see that, but also like he has this very singular look where it's like this like puffy.
He has puffy hair.
You know who he kind of reminded me of?
What's that?
Night Stalker. He's got like, it looks a little bit like if Night Stalker and like a Ken doll
and
had
Brian
a baby.
May.
And Brian May. Yeah. Cause
oh
got,
my
like,
God. He's got such got Brian May hair. It's
poofy,
not even funny.
Like Farrah Fawcett Night Stalker hair and like has that same like he has the Night Stalker's eyes but like not the jacked up teeth.
Right. And that's, I mean, better for him, for
right.
Rodney, because truthfully, that was the relationship killer, I would think, with Ramirez, is those goddamn fucking disgusting ass breath teeth.
And the smell.
Oh, mm-hmm. God, yeah. I mean, he's living on gas station food, but that was for the previous episode, which you should seek out.
Exactly.
All right, Rodney. Mm-hmm. James Alcala, born Rodrigo Jaquez Alcala Bercor on August 23rd, 1943, dubbed the dating game killer, was an American serial killer and sex offender who was sentenced to death in California for 5 murders committed in the state between 1977 and 1979, and received an additional sentence of 25 years to life after pleading guilty to only two, keep this in mind going forward, 2 homicides committed in New York in 1971 and 1977.
Okay.
While he has been conclusively linked to 8 murders, Alcala's true number of victims remains unknown and could be much higher. Authorities believe the actual number is as high as 130.
Holy shit.
That is no joke. And I'm going to dissect that even more in this episode because I truly believe doing the research for this, he's at least 100.
Yeah.
He is a fucking monster. And the more that I got into his psychopathy, especially like listening to podcasts and a documentary, that there's a great 2020 that's on YouTube you should watch if you're interested. This guy is like Ted Bundy 2.0.
Yeah, that's the same vibe I got from
the charisma's there, and he's got the angle, and it's, hey, little girl, you want to see a pretty picture?
Let me take your pictures.
Yeah. Like, this guy will eventually probably come out through DNA to be one of the most prolific serial killers, if not the most prolific of all time. So, if we go back, we'll say 1968, 10 years before the dating show, Alcala committed his first known crime on September 25th, 1968. This is an 8-year-old girl outside of the Chateau Marmont.
And how old was he at the time? Like 20s,
well,
30s?
Well, if it's 68 and he's born in 43, okay, you want to say 25. Yeah.
We can math.
We mathed fast there.
That
and
was
I'm proud.
Fast math.
Good job, everybody.
So, when an eyewitness in Los Angeles called police after watching him lure an 8-year-old girl named Tali Shapiro into his Hollywood apartment. So, basically what happened is he drove up and he saw a little girl and he's like, hey, you want to jump in my car? I know your parents. And this is in 68, so this is like...
Everybody trusts everybody.
Right. It's like, well, I bet adults know everything. Right. So time to get in this fucking paddy wagon, drive around with this fanged Dracul.
See, what people don't know is that he was driving an old Volkswagen. So he got in. He's like, Woody. And he punched her.
She said, I'm 8. This sucks. I'm out.
This game is
You're
no fun.
Stupid. I'm leaving.
All right, so he took Tali Shapiro into his Hollywood apartment, and when the police arrived, the girl was found alive, having been raped, beaten, and choked with a steel bar. Yikes. So this cop, I watched an interview with him, and you can tell even in this, I feel like it's like 2010, 2015-ish era, somewhere in there. He starts crying talking about this. Like, he's like, I knocked on the door. Dude walks up to the window, opens the shade. He's like buck ass naked, no water on him. But he's like, I just got out of the shower. I'll be right out. And he's like, I'll give you 5 seconds. Counts to 5, busts the door down, and then literally goes into this apartment. And there is blood all over the floor. Like human gore, little girl, like shoes and like a dress. And this little girl's got a steel bar on her neck, like a 2-pound steel bar that you can tell he obviously was trying to strangle her with. And they caught him in the act. So rather, he had to make a split second decision. Am I going to help this girl or am I going to chase this guy? Because he's not in the room at the time. Mm-hmm. And he chose to save the girl, which is good, I think, personally. But you can tell, especially in the 2020 documentary, that he is tortured by this. Because it's like, how many people could I have saved if I would have tackled this guy? Or...
Well, maybe. I mean, a guy who's... I would assume he was as well-built because even on the dating game, he looks like he's somewhat tall, athletic. So you take a gamble by going after him and that maybe he gets... him instead.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I understand that. And keep in mind, this is 10 years before that. And you watch this footage just like I did today. And when I see him, I just...
It's rough.
It's rough, especially knowing this early stuff. Mm-hmm. So he stops his partner. He did call for backup. So this cop, this is a good cop. He called for backup immediately. He took care of the girl first. He made that decision and I understand it and I'm with him. I get it. But Alcala slipped out the back door before the guy that was doing backup could stop him. Even though he yelled for help, the guy came through the front door. It happens. You know what? I'm going to say good cops, bad Alcala.
Yep.
I wished you would have tripped and fallen on a knife.
Bad Alcala, great.
Exactly.
Yep.
So... when the police arrived, the girl was found alive, having been raped and beaten with a steel bar, but Alcala fled. To evade the resulting arrest warrant, Alcala left the state and enrolled in the NYU Film School using the name John Berger. So John Berger. Burgers, when you make your last name your favorite food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, exactly. I love burgers. Mm-hmm. Favorite burger.
Ooh. Oh, boy. You know what?
You both are like shit. Man, a good burger will really make your day.
I like the, was it the they call it Royal Burger? Mm-hmm. It's egg and egg bacon. And
oh, you're like me. I love a good egg on a sandwich.
Oh, yeah. Like a good over medium egg, some bacon, some cheddar.
My lovely, lovely, lovely partner, Casey, she makes me the most delicious egg sandwiches every morning. Yum.
You know what I've recently been putting on burgers that I can't get enough of is barbecue sauce.
Mm. Barbecue sends your fucking taste bud to heaven.
Well, we've stumbled upon like a particularly wonderful barbecue sauce.
Because it's extra thick.
It's thick. It's like toothpaste. It's like so thick.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Five Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
The minute I take a bite of a Five Guys burger, I turn into that guy. Have you seen the video? The black guy.
Damn.
That's like, damn. Oh, yeah. That's me eating Five Guys burger.
It's a burger with strength. Of course it's so good.
It yeah. I mean, I guess I bacon cheddar burger with like a good dollop of barbecue on it.
I like them.
Sends it singing. Colby Jack.
I like them wet.
Yes.
Like lots of sauce, mayo.
There's something just slutty and fucking pornographic about it.
Like running down my wrists.
Yeah.
You know, like, then
my hunger is porno.
And then I want French fries that have good seasoning on them because I want that.
You want
greasy,
the full
wet
fucking
burger. And I want to grab them French fries and get the seasoning on my fingers. And I'm like,
Yep.
God. Lando, come here.
Oh, hell no. You think I'm giving the seasoning to him?
Yeah, it happens. So, to evade, like I said, he left the state, John Berger. In 1971, he obtained a counseling job at a New Hampshire-era arts camp for children using different alias, John Berger, even though his name's Rodney Alcala. Mm-hmm. I should mention, when the cops came into his apartment where the girl was being strangled, 1968,
mm-hmm.
there was literally... Sorry, I have the worst Canadian fucking dry burps. There was like hundreds of pictures of kids, like pornographic images. And when he got his job as a typesetter later on, there were guys that he worked with he would show those pictures to. But this is the problem, is it's like the early 70s and they think he's like avant-garde.
Right.
So they're like, what is this artistic photography? And it's meanwhile, it's just like a 12-year-old little girl like bent over weird with like a weird contrast.
Yeah.
Instagram filter. And they're just like, cool, Rodney or Burger. Anyway, so... He had this different alias as John Berger. In June of 1971, Cornelia Michelle Crilly, a 23-year-old TWA flight attendant, was found raped and strangled in her Manhattan apartment. Her murder remained unsolved until 2011. And we'll kind of get into that when we talk about the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI added Alcala to its list of 10 most wanted fugitives in early 1971. A few months later, two children attending the arts camp that he was involved in noticed his photo on an FBI poster at the post office. Alcala was arrested and extradited to California. By then, Shapiro's parents had relocated their entire family to Mexico and refused to allow her to testify at Alcala's trial. Since the authorities were unwilling to charge him, and that's true, she survived. Tally Shapiro, like she survived. And like I said, I wasn't skipping that for any reason other than like, I don't want to go into too much detail, but there was human gore all over the hallway. Mm-hmm. She was like an inch from death. The doctor who took her in after that good cop stopped the rape and strangulation of that little girl, he literally looked at him and was like, she's dead. Like, she's going to die.
Yeah.
And then she was in a coma for 32 days and woke up, and then months later was able to walk again and, like, functions came back, blood, you know, all that sort of thing. So she had insane trauma. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is her dad, like I said, they were staying at the Chateau Marmont. He was a music producer, so obviously he had some money and moved them all to Mexico and was like, let's just eat burritos and chill.
Yeah, right.
So
be done with this.
Basically, yeah.
I get that. There is, that's hard, you know, on a kid to have to like sit and testify about something like that.
Like you and don't want to relive. Like, you're trying to escape. I mean, if anything like that happened to my kids and I had the money to like escape, fuck it. We're going to Canada.
Yeah. I don't know that I would make, it's tough because at the same time as I would want to make sure that my child got justice and like to make her go through testifying, there's also a part of you that's like, it seems cruel to make her relive that.
Yeah, yeah. And it sucks because you can't go off the word of the police officers that were arrived on the scene. Like, this girl's would have been only a couple of years older and have to relive that trauma that, which, you know, if she's alive now, she probably still has PTSD from that.
Oh yeah. And she's in the documentary, the 2020 documentary specifically. And she looks great. Mm-hmm. And they do show photos from the actual crime scene. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, talk about surviving some shit.
Yeah. Right.
Alcala was paroled in 1974 after 17 months.
Jeez.
Everything was so different. White man. Oh, yep.
Hey, bye.
Thanks for flipping the tater tots good. Now get out of here. Go start your life, you goof.
Yep.
Don't fuck around.
Let me show you a pretty picture.
Less than 2 months after his release, he was rearrested for assaulting a 13-year-old girl identified in court records as Julia J., who had accepted what she thought would be a ride to school. Alcala was again paroled after serving 2 years.
Jesus.
So it's like, immediately we get him, throw him in jail, 17 months, good behavior, out. Does it again, immediately.
Mm-hmm. How do you guys feel about that? Like, the fact that
I think
this guy clearly has multiple times these assaults and rapes, you would think at a certain point that they would say, okay, enough is enough.
Now, hey there, you.
Hey, you get one Molson, that's it. I'm sorry, am I in Canada? I'm thinking Canadian because I want to escape this country. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. I love my country. But the truth is, no, it was a bad system. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still issues with the system. And there's things that happen where it's literally just like, he's a good looking guy who knows how. He's got an IQ of 140.
So he's
intelligent. He can word his words properly.
He's good looking.
He's got a thick head of hair. Guys are just like, yeah, American dream. Sometimes we hit speed bumps. Get out there, kid.
Yep.
And it sucks because truthfully, if we know anything, I mean, guys, we at this point, it's been like 6-7 years we've been covering psychopaths on this podcast. They're there to evade trouble and continue their merciless crimes, no matter what. I mean, I'm sure, and this will come up as a thing later on, but basically, this guy never wanted to admit to this stuff. It was more real to him than his name. It was more real to him than who he was as a person. It was part of who he was in his soul. Yeah. So he was always going to do this bullshit.
Yeah. Well, and people who are like that, there's no empathy. There's no sense of guilt. That's what they're so detached from it that it.
They're entitled to it. That's the way they look at it.
Right. So after Alcala's second release in 77, his Los Angeles parole officer took the unusual step of permitting a repeat offender and known flight risk to travel to New York City. NYPD cold case investigators now believe that a week after arriving in Manhattan, Alcala killed Ellen Jane Hoover, 23-year-old daughter of Herman Hoover, the owner of the popular Hollywood nightclub Ciro's, and goddaughter of Dean Martin's Sammy Davis Jr.
Wow.
Her remains were found buried under heavy rocks on a hillside overlooking the Hudson River, about about half a mile west of the Phelps Memorial Hospital in North Tarrytown in Westchester County. So he kind of, we haven't covered them, but the Hillside Stranglers were happening at the same time, and so was Son of Sam. So this is like a hotbed of like serial killer activity at this time. I mean, you got Gacy, you got Bundy. I mean, 70s are so fucking crazy for these guys. I got to assume with an ego like Alcala has, he's paying attention to these because one of the murders that he does that we'll talk about later, they thought was a Hillside Stranglers thing. But the Hillside Stranglers didn't kill somebody and do some fucking inordinate thing where they just like set them up wide out on a path for all humans to see. Alcala wanted people to find these bodies. And not only that, they all had rigor mortis set in so hard that like their jaws would be like, it looked like terror. On their faces, or their muscles are stretched to the umpteenth because he's strangling them. And then like he would put huge bite wounds in their breast because he would get angry. I don't know this. I promise I'm not a serial killer, but I know the mental gymnastics that were going on that he was going through to go through these certain crimes, especially from reading about them. The aggression of these crimes puts him on another tier to me, because it's not just like again, like the Hillside Stranglers are like, oh, whatever, prostitutes. We fucking hate these women. We're just going to dump them off on the side of the road. Where it just looks like they just slumped over. These were set up for people to find them. So,
which makes it almost worse.
And even think about the crime scene if that cop hadn't come along. This 8-year-old girl getting strangled 10 years before, again, the dating game. That would have been horrific. With a metal bar on her throat, buck naked, blood everywhere. That didn't happen with the Hillside Stranglers. There was blood, but they're not like this. You see it in the pictures. You're like, God damn, this guy's a psychopath.
And he's smart because he's seeing that there's all these this other activity, like you said, Gacy, Hillside Stranglers, and all that. He can do stuff and it could be blamed on other people. And he could say, that wasn't me. You have no proof it was me.
It wasn't me. So in 1978, Alcala worked briefly at the Los Angeles Times as a typesetter, which I mentioned. That's where he showed the pictures of basically, you know, pedophilia, pornography. Gross. Fired. And was interviewed by members of the Hillside Strangler Task Force as part of their investigation of known sex offenders. Although Alcala was ruled out as a Hillside Strangler, he was arrested and served a brief sentence for marijuana possession.
Wonderful.
Legalize it.
Okay, Bob Marley.
I'm just saying. But also, if you have mental issues, don't smoke weed.
No.
During this period, Alcala convinced hundreds of young men and women that he was a professional fashion photographer and photographed them for his portfolio, quote unquote. A Times co-worker later recalled that Alcala shared his photos with workmates. Quote, I thought it was weird, but I was young. I didn't know anything, she said. Quote, when I asked why he took the photos, he said their moms asked him to. I remember all the girls were naked.
Nice.
Quote, he said he was a professional, so in my mind, I was being a model for him, unquote, said a woman who allowed Alcala to photograph her in 1979. The portfolio also included spread after spread of naked teenage boys. She said most of the photos are sexually explicit and most of the subjects remain unidentified. Now, this is another thing. You want to go down a dark, disturbing rabbit hole. Those photographs that I talked about, those hundreds of photographs, are online for people to view.
Oh, lovely.
And you can see them. Some of them look happy. Some of them look...
they look like actual legit
models or like whatever.
I saw some of the photos and none of them were sexually explicit, thank God.
Right.
But like he did like these candid photos. Like there was one I saw of a... what looked like probably a grandfather and his grandson at like a beach, like, you know how like they have those showers that you mm-hmm. can, you know, get all the sand off. Like it was them like wearing their swim trunks and stuff, but like washing their hair and stuff. And that looked nice. Mm-hmm. And then some other ones that almost look like senior photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, legit photos. I'm like, okay, well, the guy had a gift for photography. Right. Unfortunately.
Fortunately, so. It dabbled in the dark.
Yeah, right.
So the most of the photos were, like I said, explicit. Police fear that some of the subjects may be additional cold case victims.
Jeez.
In February of 1979, according to later trial testimony, Alcala picked up 15-year-old hitchhiker Monique Hoyt in Riverside County. He drove Hoyt to his apartment where they had sex there ostensibly with her permission. They traveled to the mountains in the morning. Alcala took photos of her in her underwear as well as pictures of the two of them acting out sexual intercourse. Then he beat, raped, tied her up. He would say that it was not planned in his confession. He then took her back to Riverside in his car. She made a police report about the rape and kidnapping from a motel. Akella's mother posted his bail. Mm-hmm. Oh, mom. Mm. All right. Dating show.
Okay.
1978, Alcala was a contestant on the popular game show, The Dating Game. Host Jim Lange introduced him as a, quote, successful photographer who got his start when his father found him in the darkroom at the age of 13, fully developed. Between takes, you might find him skydiving and motorcycling.
Which, by the way, you will hear clips of this in the, or you'll hear in the middle clip I yeah. have.
For this episode.
Yeah. It's not the whole thing because there's a little bit of meandering, but yeah, you'll hear this.
Yeah.
It's knowing what you now already know, hearing his responses make it extra creepy.
Ugh, does.
Gross.
A fellow Bachelor contestant later described Alcala as a very strange guy with bizarre opinions. Alcala won the competition and a date with the episode's Bachelorette, Cheryl Bradshaw, who subsequently refused to go out with him because she found him creepy.
I'm a banana.
Good job, Cheryl. Criminal profiler Pat Brown, noting that Alcala killed at least three women after his Dating Game appearance, speculated that this rejection might have been an exacerbating factor. Quote, one wonders what that did in his mind, Brown said. That is something he would not take too well. Psychopaths don't understand the rejection. They think that something is wrong with the girl. She played me. She played hard to get.
So he's an incel.
Yes. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, more about Alcala.
Special number one, I'll start with you. When you're with a girl, what do you do?
I take them to the playground as quick as I can. We'll take a dip in the pool and build a castle from sand. We'll drink champagne and sing love song. Take a ride in the van or the Cadillac Brown. Then a trip on a ship.
All in one day?
You know it, baby, cause the kid don't play.
Special number two, how do you know? Where in the world girls like to go?
I really don't know, but I'll take the chance. We can go to Hawaii or even Japan. Hop in my jet and get cold ill. Fly to China or maybe Brazil. Take a ride down the Nile, eat escargot. Swing through the jungle and be a bongo.
Second segment time. It's time to talk about a big piece of shit.
What did you say?
He's a big...
That's Rodney.
You're full of it. We're going to talk about his victims that we know of, confirmed, basically. Oh. We've got Robin Sam So, a 12-year-old girl from Huntington Beach, disappeared somewhere between the beach and her ballet class on June 20th, 1979. Her decomposing body was found 12 days later in the L.A. foothills. Mm. Sam So's friends told police that a stranger had approached them on the beach asking to take their pictures. Detectives circulated a sketch of the photographer and Alcala's parole officer recognized him. During a search of Alcala's mother's house in Monterey Park, police found a rental receipt for a storage locker in Seattle. In a locker, they found Samso's earrings. Now, that was his trophy. He loved taking little kids or adult babies, basically 23-year-old women's mm-hmm. earrings. Alcala was arrested in July of 1979 and held without bail. In 1980, he was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death for Samso's murder. But the verdict was overturned by the California Supreme Court because jurors had been improperly informed of his prior sex crimes.
Why? It doesn't matter that they didn't see the prior stuff. This one was bad enough.
We didn't know he did a lot of other bad stuff.
I might have said he was not guilty after learning all that information.
You mean to tell me the devil is bad? More evidence. In 1986, after a second trial, virtually identical to the first, except for omission of the prior criminal record testimony, he was again convicted and sentenced to death. In 2001, a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals panel nullified the second conviction, in part because a witness was not allowed to support Alcala's contention that the park ranger who found Samso's body had been, quote, hypnotized by police investigators. Unquote.
Oh, my God. This guy is given so many damn free passes.
No kidding. That park ranger is a goddamn hero. Mm-hmm. He showed up, smelled weed, and was like, I don't know what's going on here. Usually I just find bears grabbing picnic baskets, but this is a little strange. A photographer and a young girl? I'm concerned. I got is handcuffs and bear repellent.
I mean, that is the pandemic of the late 70s, you know.
True.
Those bears stealing picnic baskets.
That's right. And weed.
And getting stuck in rabbit holes.
You know Yogi gets stoned as shit up in the tree.
That's why he's always stealing picnic baskets, because he's got the munchies.
Hey, yo, boo-boo. Cornelia Michael Criley, 23, on June 12th, 1971.
My favorite year.
Yeah. Alcala raped and strangled with her own nylon stockings. Criley leaving her... nylon stockings of Criley, leaving her dead in her apartment at 427 East 83rd Street in New York City, New York. It is believed that Criley met Alcala as she moved into her new apartment and that she might have accepted Alcala's help in moving some furniture.
Ah, getting a new place, getting it all set up, the hopes and dreams of of having to decorate your new apartment.
Oh, Jesus.
Which X-Men picture are you going to hang on the mantelpiece?
I mean, yeah, is she a Jean Grey type of person or is she a Rogue type of person?
Or maybe Storm.
Or maybe Storm.
Christine Ruth Thornton, 28, in 1977, Thornton and her lover moved away from her family to live in San Antonio, Texas. After they split up in Biloxi, Mississippi, in June of the same year, she was last spotted leaving and was never heard from again. She later ran across the serial killer Rodney Alcala, and she gave him permission to take pictures of her like he did with many of his victims. He eventually killed her and dumped her body close to Granger, Wyoming, along Interstate 80, where it was not found until 1982.
Wow.
At the time of her passing, she was 6 months pregnant. In 2013, an image of a dark-haired woman riding a motorcycle while wearing a yellow shirt was recognized by Thornton's sister. The photo was shot not far from the spot where she was subsequently laid to rest. She was identified in the summer of 2015, and Rodney Alcala was charged with killing her. So these things just popped up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's much like a future episode we have yet to do on the confession killer. These guys were just transients, you know? Mm-hmm. There was no home. Their home was their instincts, their drives, their desires, which are always... If they're not... goals where they're hopefully trying to build something up or search for inner peace. There are demons out there, folks. I mean, I hate to sound biblical, but it's true. I mean, there's real angels and real demons in this world. And maybe it's not necessarily the version that you think of when it comes to the Bible, but like in the real world, you know, it's terrifying. And, I don't know if there's anything when we cover stuff like this, I just want people to know that like, I hope that at the end of the day, you have a close group that you can confide in. Mm-hmm. Mental health is always a big deal. And if you're somebody who struggles, especially with dark feelings, talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is medication out there. And I know the mental health world is, I mean, I hate to say it, but I still feel like we're in the Genesis phase of that whole thing. And realistically, it's, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully it's getting better.
Right.
I know we, April and I specifically struggle with that stuff too. Yeah. So, you know, talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for him, home is where the heart is. Or the heart of the next 14-year-old he's going to try and rape. Yeah. Do you think he takes, after he beats the hell out of them and kills them, do you think he puts a live, laugh, love post-it note on them?
No, he puts an I voted sticker on their eyeball. God damn. Oh, God damn.
I bet he voted for Tudor Dixon.
Probably. In 2013, an image of a dark-haired woman, like I said, on the motorcycle, Thornton's sister recognized it. He was charged in 2015, and Rodney Alcala was charged with killing her. Alcala acknowledged having seen her and taking pictures of her, but he said she was alive before he left her. Wow. So, denial, even in 2015.
Jeez.
So, there's also Ellen Jane Hoover, 23. She was last seen in her apartment on 3rd Avenue at 44th Street in New York City, New York, on July 15, 77. Her date book showed that she had an appointment to meet with one John Berger that same day. Later that year, a tip to the FBI was made about how wanted felon Alcala had been arrested by the police a few years previously for the Tally Shapiro case in New Hampshire, while working as a drama camp counselor using the alias John Berger. The FBI questioned Alcala in L.A. He admitted knowing Ellen Hoover, but investigators could not arrest him without finding her body. Ellen Hoover's body was eventually found on the Rockefeller Estate in North Tarrytown, New York, near where an aspiring model would later report that Berger had taken photos of her. Jill Terry Barcombe, 18. Barcombe was a teenage girl from Oneida, New York, who was murdered by Alcala on November 9th, 1977 in L.A., California. Barcombe had been in Southern California for about 3 weeks when her body was found on a dirt path near Mulholland Drive in L.A. Barcombe was found in a knee-to-chest position and naked from the waist down. There were signs of sexual assault, and she had been strangled with a pair of blue slacks and beaten. She had also 3 bite marks on her right breast. Georgia Marie Wickstead, 27, on December 16, 1977. Wickstead, a nurse, was discovered dead in her Malibu apartment. She was last seen when she drove another nurse, Barbara Gale, home from a bar. When she did not show up to work the next day, Gale and their co-workers reported her missing. Police arrived at Wickstead's apartment to find signs of forced entry. Wickstead was posed naked on her bedroom floor, strangled with her nylon. She had been sexually assaulted and her skull had been bashed in, apparently with a nearby hammer, and her genitals had been mutilated, which sounds... Yeah. I'm trying to think of who... There was a few guys who... It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Prosecutors did use DNA evidence to convict him of that. Mm-hmm. Charlotte Lee Shug Lamb, 31, on June 24th, 1978, Lamb, a legal secretary of Santa Monica, was found dead in the laundry room of the apartment complex where she was living in El Segundo. She'd been sexually assaulted, beaten, and strangled with a shoelace and was posed with her hands behind her back. DNA at the scene would match that of Alcala. Jill Marie Parenteau, 21, on June 13th, 1979. Parenteau, a computer key punch operator, left work early to go to a basketball game. When she did not make it to work the next day, police went to her Burbank apartment to investigate. They found a scene of forced entry. Parenteau was dead, naked on her bathroom floor. She was posed with pillows under her shoulders. She had been sexually assaulted, beaten, and strangled. Her killer cut himself crawling... cut himself crawling in a window. Blood evidence matching that of 3% of the population did not rule out or confirm Rodney Alcala as the perpetrator, but Parenteau's friend, Catherine Bryant, testified that she and Parenteau had met Alcala at a club several times. And last of the confirmed, Robin Christine Samso, 12. She was abducted on June 20th, 1979, as she rode a borrowed bicycle from her neighborhood in Huntington Beach to ballet practice. Her decomposing body was found about 12 days later, dumped off Santa Ana Canyon Road. She had been beaten, raped, and stabbed with a knife.
Jeez.
Bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
This shithead had 3 trials, which we kind of alluded to earlier. Mm-hmm. Represented himself, as many sociopathic monsters do, mm-hmm. at the last and final trial. He was like, that's it. I'm a lawyer. Me and my 140 IQ, I'm smart.
That's, yeah. They always think that they're smarter than the legal. Well, of course he thinks he's smarter than the legal system because he's already gotten away from all of that. Right. How many times already? They failed. The justice system failed.
It failed. It failed. So he was intelligent and able to persuade his way out of things. But thankfully, in the end, he couldn't convince the jury to believe him. Because like most people, we need lawyers who pass the bar. Mm-hmm. You don't perform surgery on yourself if you know nothing about medicine.
Right.
Yep.
You can't dumb your way through brain surgery. And similarly, the law. His favorite movie was When Harry Met Sally, just so you know. Just a random fact I thought I would throw in the fucking itinerary.
That's not what I expected. I thought it would be like
Schindler's
List.
That's the thing is like, even like Son of Sam, like his favorite shit was like...
The Lion King.
No, it was like love themes by some... Like, meanwhile, he's just blasting girls. He's like, oh God. Oh God, I'm here in New York and I'm confused and I'm going to blast you. Fucking Son of Sam. What a piece of shit.
Right.
All these guys are pieces of shit at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Like When Harry Met Sally, it's the last fucking thing I would say if I was like, what's your favorite movie? I mean, like Dahmer, Exorcist 3. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Right.
Right.
But When Harry Met Sally, you self-deluded piece of shit.
Right.
Did you think these were romances? A 12-year-old girl mm-hmm. from ballet class?
Yep.
Fuck. And by the way, When Harry Met Sally, that's a crime too. Billy Crystal isn't funny. During his...
Possibly the worst crime we've talked about on this show yet.
During his final trial, by the way, this is interesting, Charlize Theron was seen in the courtroom researching her role for the movie Monster about Eileen Sigpig Wuornos.
Ooh, the Sigpig herself.
Mm-hmm. She did good in that movie. It is really good. Seek it out. At the end of his final argument against the death penalty, because he was... They were like, we should kill you now. He played a segment of the Arlo Guthrie song Alice Restaurant Massacre, an 18-minute long rambling song that's anti-war. The excerpt features a guy approaching a shrink telling him about how he wants to kill and see blood and gore. Was it an admission of guilt? He did look at the jury and go, huh?
It was me.
Played this weird rambly folk fucking song. I'm sorry, for fans out there, I don't mean to, if you're a fan, but goddamn, I listened to this thing and I was like, I am so goddamn bored. Mm-hmm. And the song just started and it's 18 goddamn minutes long.
Maybe so, that's why he was a killer. He's like, yeah, I love listening to like Bunglefoot. I totally lost my train of thought. Interesting.
It's getting late, folks. Who knows if it was an admission of guilt, but he didn't have to say it out loud, which I think made him happy and is literally the most selfish act of any of the killers we've ever covered, really. I mean, almost every single one of them admitted it, but even him, he was just like, let me play a fucking bullshit song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know, at least like Dahmer owned up to it, you know?
Right.
And don't get me wrong. It doesn't make it any better.
I have
the crime, but
I have 10 times more compassion for Dahmer than I do this guy mm-hmm. because he died at 77 of natural causes in jail, not by lethal injection,
mm-hmm. which is bullshit. He's able to live that long.
Is that a happy ending? Probably for Rodney.
Yeah. He died in what, 2017?
Something like that. 2017, 18, yep. Something like that. And that's it. That's Rodney Alcala.
What a fuck.
All right, verdict.
Larry's not even going to have to edit anything here. I don't remember that part in the...
I just added it. I thought monkeys would be fun.
I like the flair.
I was the bongos.
Yeah, I got that. Bongos.
I know. I was like, he's going to pick percussion. I'm just going to have to go with the other stuff. Verdict. Do you think he killed more than he was accused of?
Absolutely he did.
Mm-hmm. I put that in first just because my hope... Well, yeah, okay, absolutely. April, what do you say?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Me too.
Especially with like the binder full of...
Erotic.
Yeah. They're
pedophilia. That sentence should never be said. Erotic pedophilia. Yeah, it should be strict. Mm-hmm. Word jail.
Yeah. I think at the very least, like, let's say hypothetically that none of the people that were in that photo album were murdered.
Right.
They were still sexually assaulted. Which
right.
is yes. like,
that's trauma too.
Exactly.
Intense trauma.
For sure. And, you know, I would just have to imagine, especially because, like, you know, the severity of the aggression and the rage and the murders, there have to be more.
What's telling, I think, too, is in that the 2020 documentary, when Tali Shapiro is talking, like, modern day, mm-hmm. she doesn't remember any of it.
Yeah.
That's all suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's so dark and morbid.
Right.
I mean, literally, it goes from, like, and then we walked into his apartment, and then 32 days later, I'm in a hospital.
Which, honestly, I'm glad
yes.
for the brain's ability to protect itself in that way.
Yeah.
You know, because as an 8-year-old girl, that she doesn't need to remember that.
Never. And, I mean, you can say whatever, oh, white girl, posh life, whatever, and be like, you know, she'll be fine. Other people have it worse. But it's like, so many of these victims were so young, just young, beautiful, good people. I mean, I don't know, maybe one of them.
See, I would almost wonder, is it better or not? Because the fact is her name will always forever be connected to him. Mm-hmm. And even though she doesn't remember it, how many times do you think people go to her and, like, she's probably seen the photos and,
right.
and whatnot. So to have to be for the rest of your life, which considering she was so young, always be attached. That's gotta suck.
Oh, for sure.
What do you think? This poses a question to me to ask my beautiful co-hosts here. What do you think is worse, surviving a serial killer or being a serial killer's child?
Oh, God.
Because I know the BTK, his daughter right. put out a book, and there's a whole level of trauma to that, too.
I would say guilt. The survivor, because the thing is a serial killer's child, at a certain point, they can change their name. And
true.
They can move to a different place. And now, granted, the internet is what it is now, mm-hmm. but, you know, look at, like, Dahmer's little brother changed his name,
mm-hmm.
and has been able to live life.
Right.
I know you're out there, that. Lionel. No, I hope you peace. I really yeah. do. Jesus Christ.
Right.
But, you know, to be the victim, if you were to survive, especially if you're older, you're going to carry that till the day you mm-hmm. die.
That's a level of horror that, like, humans should never have to experience. Like, at least as the child of a serial killer, like, you didn't have to witness, hopefully, I'm assuming, you've not witnessed anything or, like, seen anything that's super scarring. It's just like, well, my dad's awful.
Yeah.
You know?
My dad's Hitler.
Right.
Oops.
Oops.
Guten Tag. Oops. Time to move to Argentina. Also, I want to say it's David Dahmer, not Lionel. That's his dad.
Oh, yeah.
Stop in a tweet. Anyway. Yeah. Guy's a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is our last big banger kind of episode when it comes to serial killers before the end of the year. And yeah. We are taking a break. We just want to say that now. We're off December and January. And yep. But we will be posting past what we'll call the Patreon bonus-y episodes, mm-hmm. like stuff from Potty Slam, Stiff Joystick.
Yeah.
You guys are going to get a taste. Spaceship.
Yeah, we're going to give you guys a taste of 8 succulent tracks from the past. Speaking of tracks, I think Larry posted his new album mm-hmm. today.
He did.
And yeah. I think it's an EP or it's an album. I don't know.
It's an EP.
Yeah.
Okay. Check out Big Old Britches on Bandcamp. The guy is, it's weird to say one of your favorite artists is one of your best friends, but it's true. He is mm-hmm. so talented and we love him to death, and please check it out. And I love seeing people listening to his music, because I just, inside of his his skeptic heart. It's nice to see it warm occasionally mm-hmm. to that sort of stuff. So please, please check it out.
You know, this is his favorite part of the episode is when we're like, oh, Larry, he's the best.
We miss you, Larry.
We do. We miss you. But anyways, so yeah, check out. That's I had written down plugs I wanted to throw out. His new music was up there.
Yes, absolutely.
Sweet Summer Sky is still playing mm-hmm. for me. I love that album. The Glow is one of my favorite songs he's ever done. And yeah, let's see. Also, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram. We'll post some pictures. We've got images that I saved. My phone looks so weird when I get those iPhone shares where it's like pictures mm-hmm. from your vacation. And then it's like a random picture of like Ed Kemper, the co-ed killer. I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, well.
Yeah. But it happens. Anyway, follow us on all the social media. Yeah. Check us out on the Patreon, patreon.com/BeerCityMediaPodcast. The newest episode of Have You Heard Of is up, and we talk about Hard Target Diabetes. Wilford Brimley rides again.
Find us on Twitter at Elon Musk.
Sure. Hey, man, free speech is free again, right. Or whatever.
The nerd is free.
That's right. Hey, you know what? Whatever. At this point, I just don't care anymore. I'm 40. Get off my lawn. I love you guys. And that's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one, guys.
This has been a presentation of Beer City Media.